Welcome to Dads in the House, part of Playlist Presents. I'm your host, Damon Runnels. Each month, I head out to see a show in this vibrant performing arts community and bring along a fellow dad or mom or maybe just someone who wants to join. We see a show, we chat about it here on this podcast. Pretty simple premise. That's the plan, anyways. This month's production brought up questions for me about the traditions of theater, where we perform, and the formats and structure that we use. In its attempt to compete with TV and other forms of home entertainment over the last two decades, I wonder if we have gone too far in familiarizing the theatrical experience. I wonder if part of the allure of live performing arts is the surprise that is possible when we don't conform to traditional standards. I hope you enjoy the conversation. All right, I am Damon Runnels, and we are back with the second episode of Dads in the House. I got my good friend Conrad Case here with me. Say hi, Conrad.
Hey, what's up, y'all?
Yeah. We are off to Park Square Theater in the shining city of St. Paul, as Mark Wheat on The Current used to say. And we are headed over to see the co-production with Prime Theater. So Prime Theater, Prime Companies, Prime Theater.
Prime Theater.
Prime Theater of the Revolutionists, right?
Yes.
Excellent. So, and true form, I have done zero research ahead. I think Great. That is the new theme of this series is to do absolutely no pre-work on
just
looking.
Going blind.
Going blind and see theater the same way, you know, an audience member would. So, yes. Conrad, this was your selection. You kind of recommended that we go check this out. What drew you to this? What were you thinking? Why are we headed out to see this?
Well, I thought it was cool because it's a four-person, all-female cast. It's historic, somewhat, and comedic. And some of the last few things before pandemic stuff that I saw was all-female productions, and I just found them to be really compelling. So, yeah.
Excellent.
That's what I thought of this one, yeah.
Excellent. Yes. I had heard of Prime when they started up. I'm not going to get my years right, mostly because I think the pandemic has completely fried my sense of time. But I do remember when Prime started up, a company focused on women in the prime of their life, in a kind of, I think, what I would call ironic slap in the face to the industry, because let's be honest, the theater and film, I think you could say film as well, industry have a pretty shite track record of providing roles and opportunities for women who are in the, quote, prime of their life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was something that, and I've not seen one of their performances before. Have you seen anything by Prime?
No.
Great.
No.
Excellent. So we are both heading into something brand new and fresh. I think we should probably at least say it. This is the final production that's happening on Park Square stage for the 2022-2023 season.
Yeah.
After they, and I think you told me about this, you saw the announcement before.
I got their newsletter.
Okay.
So I was able to see their announcement kind of in real time.
And they essentially canceled the rest of their season, right?
Yeah, they're still doing classes and all that stuff.
Okay.
But no more. Yeah, they're not really doing any productions.
I'll see, maybe we can look this up on the way back before we record the second half of this post show. But I think one thing I'd like to check out, because I know that, it is Stepping Stone that moved into their space, or shares the space with them now, I believe. So I would like to see how much of the classes are part of that company's kind of repertoire, which they've been long known for doing a lot of classes for youth and performance training for youth. I think it's certainly worth addressing. Like, this is it for a bit, while Park Square has said they are kind of, they're taking a pause, a hiatus.
Yeah, I'm trying to, just kind of figure out what the plan of action is, and just kind of take it from there. They haven't said anything, you know, nothing set in cement.
Right, yeah. Right. I think I saw in a line on their site with something like reorg and re-energize or something along those lines.
Yeah.
This is, I knew, I didn't know this was coming, but I suspected it might be. Playlist was slated in late March
early April to run at the time what would have been Park Square's general auditions.
The general, yeah.
Yeah, and that ended up getting bagged, and I got a email about that with the person I was coordinating with, and so that obviously writing on the wall kind of thing made me think a little of like, ooh, what's gonna happen? But to get the official announcement, so so we're out supporting. We're gonna check out the Prime Productions Revolutionists, and we will have more on the backside after we see the show. Conrad, before we cut out here, anything else specific you are kind of looking for or looking to see in tonight's show?
I'm just there to be entertained.
Excellent. Myself as well. I am looking to see. I did not recognize all of the cast members, so I'm looking to see some new folks, new faces for myself at least. I'm obviously not I'm not 150% dialed into everyone in the community, but it'll be good to see some new performers and to check out a show at Park Square, which I haven't been to in a long time. So, cool. After the break, we'll be back with our 25, 30 or so minute review of The Revolutionists. Prime Productions at Park Square Theater. All right, we are back at not at the Minnesota Playlist headquarters in my basement, but we are in fact in the living room of Monsieur Conrad Case. That's my terrible French accent. Only appropriate for this evening's performance, yep. I believe. So, Conrad, thanks for joining me for Prime Productions' performance of The Revolutionists.
Yeah, for sure.
So, let's start just real quick, a little bit about yourself, Conrad, and your background in theater.
Yeah, I've been doing theater for almost 20-ish years. Moved to the Twin Cities in 2015 from Nebraska originally. Came here just because the bigger theater scene, more on-camera stuff. And then the pandemic hit and kind of reevaluated my life choices, mm-hmm. Which is...
Like many of us.
Just like so many of us. So, yeah.
Also had a baby.
Did have a baby.
Yes, a lovely, lovely baby.
Yeah, a year ago.
Which makes doing theater a lot harder.
Yes, it really does. You know, if she's interested in theater when she gets older, maybe I'll go audition for something with her. But
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. But doesn't stop us from going and seeing shows.
So. Not at all.
And indeed. So, yep. But also, like myself on Feast last time, this was your first time back in a performance space with live theater. Pretty much following the pandemic, right? I know you said you did a couple of virtual performances that you and
I saw
Jamie watched.
Yep, mm-hmm. Walking Shadows, one-man show of Beowulf, mm-hmm. with John Heinbach.
Mm-hmm.
And God, that's the only thing I'm thinking of right now.
Okay.
That pops in my head.
Yeah. Well, it was a dark time. So.
It was.
We're trying to forget a lot of it. So a return to a live performance at a larger venue, moderately larger venue of Park Square.
Yep.
So, thanks for sharing that. Let's jump in and talk a little bit about the show that we saw tonight. So just to remind folks, The Revolutionists, written by Lauren Gunderson, a pretty accomplished playwright. I know Meg, my co-partner for Swan Dive Theater, has read quite a few of her pieces, really likes her work. I'm not as super familiar. This was also, I believe, both your and my first time, as we mentioned, seeing Prime Productions.
Yeah.
And that's correction. It was not Prime Company, not Prime Theater, Prime Productions. Getting it right. This is what happens when you do your research and come home with an actual playbill about the show. So Conrad, what worked for you about this piece tonight?
I think pacing definitely. I felt like for the most part, it seemed to move at least. It mm-hmm. didn't linger too far in any scene for mm-hmm. me, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Shows 100 minutes with a
10-minute intermission.
10-minute intermission, so it is a full commitment.
it is, and I will say that at least it continued to move,
mm-hmm.
you know, from one scene to the next, which isn't always the case in a lot of theater, lot of theater that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciated that. There was some performances and some comedy in the show that I thought was great. There's a lot of winks to modern theater, musicals, Les Mis.
A lot of Les Mis jokes. I loved the Les Mis jokes.
I did too. I was initially like, wait, it took me like a 1, 2, 3. And yeah. I was like, boom, I got it.
We should note that the play is set during the French Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about four women, three of whom are actual historical characters, historical individuals,
yep.
historical women, and one who's a kind of amalgamation of a couple of types of people,
yes.
That the main character, played by Alison Edwards, Olympe, I never quite got the pronunciation.
Olympe, I think is how they were pronouncing it.
Okay, de Gauche, who was a French playwright and killed in 1793 during the Revolution, kind of revolves around her.
Mm-hmm.
So as listeners of the first version of this podcast know, we're not here to spoil the story, and we're not going to talk too much about what happens in the play. If you'd like to know what happens in the play, go see the play. Live performance, right? Get out,
please.
Go see the show, go support Prime, go support Park Square, right? If you're here for a recap, this is not the place. We're going to just talk about things that worked and worked. So yeah, a lot of Les Mis references, a lot mm-hmm. of, and that kind of fits in. Obviously, Lauren has taken a lot of, it's modern language with
mm-hmm.
with historical context.
Yep.
And that was a note from director Shelley Place that she really loved about this piece.
Yeah. No, I would agree. Which, again, I think, that being said, made the material a little bit more accessible
mm-hmm.
for a modern audience.
Yes.
Especially when you think about anything old and French and I don't know. It's like, history wasn't my best subject anyway. So,
right.
I think
this piece is a period piece, falls flat on its face.
Yes. And it would have been a real slog. So I do appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we should also, I mentioned in the car ride home, point out the very clear fact that we are two white cis men
mm-hmm.
seeing a show about women's revolution,
mm-hmm.
Written by a woman playwright, directed by a woman with a heavily, female cast and crew,
yeah.
and very much about the story of the unwritten stories. And that's one of the things I really got out of this. I know Marie Antoinette. We've
yep.
all heard of Marie Antoinette. You can fail history and still know that there was this woman, Marie Antoinette.
Let them eat cake, yes.
Exactly, right?
Yes.
Which she's known for. And again, I love that we punch on that.
Yes.
In this show.
It's very much aware.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the audience has no idea who the other characters are.
No idea who they were. So,
yeah.
Two of them being, again, historical figures. So, this, even with that, even being, excuse me, we're also enjoying a lovely beer. So, while we record this podcast. So, we're not going to shy away from that. It's, as Brecht says, theater without beer is just a museum, right?
Yes.
So, we're, to come at that and understand that we, this show and this story is not about us, but in a lot of ways is for us. And I was surprised how much I enjoyed the playfulness of Gunnarsson's writing about these characters dealing with these what are obviously
yeah.
very, very heavy themes and motifs and a very, very scary time period.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that struck with you, or how that sat with you as you kind of went through that.
I would have to agree. I mean, I think she did the playwright did a nice balance between those two
mm-hmm.
without making fun of the heavy stuff,
mm-hmm.
which you easily could have crossed over into, and I don't think the writer ever did that.
Right.
And I appreciate kind of honoring what happened to these women in the end. You know? So,
even though this is totally a comedy.
Totally.
Very, very much a comedy.
Yes.
Very much a comedy.
Yes.
Great. What? Anything else that struck you that worked? Things that stood out to you?
I found the Marie Antoinette, the actor. She was just really, really funny.
Played by Jane Froiland. Jane, quite a staple in the Twin Cities performing arts community. Only in the sense that I know Jane personally, and so I'll say that Jane did a series, season two of the Bazness podcast that we produce. I'm familiar with Allison Edwards' name, who played Alim. I do not know Tia Marie Tanzer, or Jasmine Porter, but who both have, from their bios in here, have done a decent amount of work as well. Yeah. So,
but no, Jane was, I just thought she was just funny.
Mm-hmm.
And not, again, she didn't feel like a character. I mean, she was doing some character stuff, but she didn't feel character-y.
Mm-hmm.
I still felt she was very grounded. And again, I felt like she really got what the writer was trying to do with Marie Antoinette in this show, and I really appreciated it. And when it was just kind of a nice little pop when she came in.
Yes. Her entrance is definitely worth going to the show for alone.
Oh, quite. Man. No, she was very, she's very funny.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed her.
The ensemble did work really well together. I think a couple things that we commented on in the car ride home. We are seeing the show on a Wednesday night.
Yep.
After 2 days off.
Yep.
I think energy overall may have been a little low.
Mm-hmm.
Allison, I'm not sure if she's getting over being sick or something, but both you and I noted that her voice towards the end of the show sounded strained.
Yeah.
Which may have led to some of the challenges, which that we noticed, which I think were there. Yeah, there was a. There just there was a. The space was hard to control, to dominate, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that stood out about Jane with that entrance was it for a second it felt full.
Yes.
And it felt like the overall space had been really tapped into. But from my perspective, the whole given the opportunity, I would not want to see this show at Park Square.
Right. I mean, that's what we were kind of chatting about just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think a different venue, and I get in a completely different setup, you know, I think would have kind of just done it more justice.
Yeah.
As a production.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
I think in a traditional proscenium theater, I just felt like the whole show got kind of ate up a little bit.
Yeah.
Swallowed up.
Yeah.
Swallowed up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You have four really strong female actors
mm-hmm.
performing on that, in this ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the staging of it in that space and the way combined with the set, which mm-hmm. we both said was really tough for both of us.
Yeah.
Didn't seem so. We've obviously moved into the things that aren't working phase. If anyone's paying attention and listening at home right now, but those things I think fought the piece overall.
Yeah.
They ended up fighting the piece a bit,
which is unfortunate because I think mm-hmm. Going back to the group of women in the show, I feel like I will say, and it's just popped in my head, like. You can tell they all were very much supporting one another,
mm-hmm.
which you don't always see on stage. You can easily see her like, wow, they're
no,
that they, one's in it for themselves.
They were dialed in with each other.
Never felt that way from any of them. That felt like they were all very much supportive.
Truly an ensemble piece.
Yes. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I think that was super apparent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the script as a whole. I really enjoyed the story as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Gunderson's script quite a bit. I can see why Shelley and Prime wanted to do this piece. Meg and I and Swan Dive have been, we've worked with a playwright before who wrote a piece about Roman, the mother of essentially the mother of Nero, Agrippina, and his whole piece. That's this is a long-winded backdoor to my point here, but she, the whole piece is about her story never being written because men always rewrite women's stories. And I was really reminded, like I was reminded of that in the show, but only when you and I were talking on the ride home about the pop cultural references that constantly come up in the show. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking to myself, yeah, I wonder if Gunderson's using those as like a reminder that women's stories are constantly being reappropriated for other things, and it's guys who end up writing them, right?
Wow, yeah.
And I think that happens a lot. So those kind of parallel, you know, kind of came to me because there's a lot of, like, I love the choice to not, for this not to be buried. I love the choice to have, you know, as Kelly says, you know, that a millennial wrote this and that it's in modern language. Mm-hmm. And that's so great. And those references are funny. And yet it's like, here we are hearing about these women's lives, but we're constantly being injected with the external cultural forces that keep women from being able to tell their own story.
Wow.
So yeah, that was a moment. So I really enjoyed the script. That being said, getting back into some things that I think didn't work. The space did not work.
Space didn't work.
I think it was too huge. I wanted that show so much more intimate, and I wanted that ensemble up in my face.
Yeah, and I think it's a show that lends itself to that. Mm-hmm. Completely. You know?
Yeah.
It just does. And it really, really and truly needed to be an intimate space.
Yeah.
I think it would have leaps and bounds been more enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah. I think the space does two things. As you said, I agree. I think it swallows the performers.
Yeah.
And if you don't have, either if you're not used to performing in a space that big or mm-hmm. whatever it is, I think it ends up diminishing the work that you've done.
Yeah.
But along with that, the decision to cover transitions with music and have us sit with nothing happening is one that is just from a personal preference. If I could banish a choice from the theater, that would be the one that I would banish because it just makes a show longer than it needs to be.
And it's like, it kills the momentum.
It kills the momentum.
Yeah. It makes us all stop for a second.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And then stop. And then,
yeah.
And it's like, and it takes the air out of it.
Yeah.
We don't need it. Like I said, pacing, just keep that.
Keep it moving. It had it. It's written in there. Mm-hmm. Like it's in it. Like Gunderson set you up to just clip along. And I would say, like, even for me, I almost wanted the pace. I wanted it like
for sure.
30 to 40% faster right off the bat. I wanted almost slapstick speed from the get go.
Well, and it's funny too, you know, because there's one transition where they kind of take your note.
Yes.
And they have an actor out there doing a thing.
Doing a thing, yeah.
As they're doing stuff as behind they're doing stuff. And I was like, yes.
Yes.
Why isn't this from the beginning?
Let's just move into the next scene.
Yes.
It's theater.
Don't,
I know we're not actually switching locations. Mm-hmm. We're not actually going anywhere. I'm in a seat. Like, and you already have a lot in this script that wants to break the fourth wall. It feels like it, but it ultimately doesn't, and that's fine. I really wanted that to not be there. And I wanted to just keep it moving, keep me going. I mean, if you have a moment where the audience can stop long enough to applaud for what they just watched, then I don't know. I feel like then we've lost momentum and now I am resetting expectations and I'm like, oh, here's the performance. And this gets into a little of one of the broader topics that I think you and I discussed, which is this, like, so again, this is only my second show post-pandemic. I've seen a couple weeks ago, I saw a very tiny, intimate performance in basically a reception space at a restaurant. And now I'm in a traditional theater.
Right.
You know, as you said, you haven't seen anything really, and to go in and see Park Square.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, I was reminded, reminded of all of those things that we have in this kind of traditional theater space that have become, standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked in the car ride about, Park Square challenges. And sure enough, we had a board member come out
and talk about that.
And, you know, tell us that, like, they're in desperate need.
Yeah.
And Park Square is struggling,
yeah.
Which we know. So we've got that. And then we've got a audio announcement to turn off your cell phones,
yeah.
You know, and do that stuff. And the lights go dim. And now the play begins. And I don't know how you feel about that, but it's, I don't know.
No, I agree. Well, it doesn't also help being a tall person and trying to fit in those seats anyway. It's miserable.
Yeah.
And I never fit.
Yeah.
Everywhere I've been, I can be in New York City, I can be in Colorado, I don't fit. So, definitely I would love to move theater outside of the traditional sense of a proscenium space.
Mm-hmm.
I love round in the round. You know, borrowed spaces, all that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
because it sometimes forces me to be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I can't lean back on my laurels and kind of zone out, which is some of the stuff I was doing tonight because of that.
Yeah.
You know, so like moving it into a more non-traditional setting, I think is the way to go, at least for me.
Yeah.
You know, and if I think about the shows that I've seen in the past, the ones that are non-traditional tend to stick out.
Yeah.
More than the ones that, you know, like, I'll example, I saw the show in New York, and it was at an old bank, and it was a show called Fuerte Brista, and it was a performance art piece, which it was like dance,
mm-hmm.
And it, with a DJ in the background, you didn't sit, you stood, and the set moved with you, and it all transitioned, and it was... I think I was on my feet for almost 2 hours and it felt like 10 minutes.
Hmm.
It was incredible. It was probably one of the neatest things I'd ever seen in my life.
Hmm.
You know, so that being said, like, there is a lot to be said about using a more non-traditional setting for theater.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think if there's a challenge for the post-pandemic performing arts world, it's, you know, what can we do with found spaces? What can we do with what can we do with non-traditional spaces? And there are plenty of companies out there that are, I think, trying that and moving towards that.
Yeah.
We got a few more minutes. I want to hit on one thing, in Shelley and Allison's, cause Allison Edwards, co-owner producer, with Prime, along with Shelley. One thing they write in the beginning in this kind of introductory thing is they say, set during the French Revolution, plays both a true story and a dream fugue by a talented quartet. And we mentioned previously they had this big set, and it wasn't hyper literal, but a lot of it was designed to be very literal. There was a door. There was a desk with a rug underneath it. There was
balcony.
There was a balcony and a stair walking up to it.
Yeah.
We talked about it in the car ride at home. It did not work for either of us. There was also a very large projection screen with projections that. I think detracted more than they probably added to it. And I definitely think the set got in the way of the show. But more importantly, like, lights, set, even the sound, like, so little of it said dream fugue.
Mm-hmm.
To me.
No, not at all. Everything, I mean, with the way the set was set up for me, it still felt very much like it was based in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is more real than it is dream or
whatever
they want to go with it. But I didn't get dream or meta or
yeah,
anything.
No, it's there were a couple moments that were, I think that did work. I'm thinking of I really liked the prison scenes in which the light was shot from the back of these slats and made it look like prison bars. And so converting the set in different ways with light in a couple of places worked really well. But overall, yeah, the design of it just like, and even, I mean, the costumes were literal.
Yeah. Like every, right. That was, again, that was the other thing. It's like, I want to, because the speech was modern.
Yeah.
And there was, the comedy was, you know, modern.
Yeah.
I wanted,
these women don't know each other. No. They're not, like, they're not friends in historical context.
No, not at all. And so, like, I wanted that to just, I just wanted it all to be a little bit more grounded, a little bit more natural.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't want real costumes.
No.
I guess I wanted it, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
it
know
was,
how...
It was,
there's ways you could go about it.
Just kind of fought against itself.
It did.
It's a concept, you know?
It did. I feel like, yeah, I feel like the design of it tried to be a very, like, traditional, literal, like, show, like, theatrical performance. This is drama, right? Yeah. But the words and the language and the script and the performances all suggested this heightened, like, weird dream. Like, this is, like, it's like a fever dream amidst the backdrop of people having their heads chopped off every 37 seconds.
Yeah, like, it felt like almost like not quite theater absurd, but some absurdist elements kind of within it, you know?
Yeah.
But we never got that.
We didn't get it. No. Probably I did notice the pre-show music, they're using, you know, either violin quartets or harpsichord of modern music.
Yeah, which you have some Lady Gaga in there.
Right, which was very creative. It's like they bit a little into that apple, but they didn't go all the way. And I was like, go all the way. And I think, a reduction of space in a small intimate space with less stuff and more dreamlike qualities to things, mm-hmm. where stuff is just constantly, you know, fugue. I had to look up the definition of a fugue because I wanted to be reminded. In music, a fugue is a theme or motif that's played the same but picked up by different parts of the orchestra and compounded upon each other, creating a different sound. In a dream, like, our brains take these pieces of memory and thought and they just keep putting them in different things and, like, regurgitating them in different ways. And that's why dreams are so fucking messed up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted as the world in which these women played inside of, because there was a lot of play. And I think there would have been potentially more playing. And I think that pacing and that comedy element could have been ratcheted up if it was in that kind of container.
Yeah.
Instead of the container that we got, which was really kind of like a very traditional style, I'm on a proscenium stage.
Yeah. Yes. So, no, I agree.
Awesome. Thank you, Conrad.
Thank
again,
you.
For coming out and seeing this with me.
Thank you.
I think it's definitely a show worth seeing. I think people should go out and see The Revolutionists.
Yeah.
I think for the acting and for the performance and for the ensemble.
Yep.
Definitely for Laurie Gunderson's script. I would encourage you, if you can, to sit close.
Yes.
Honestly. We were in row K.
We were all the way in the back.
We were towards the back, which didn't help the situation.
No.
And I wonder if that experience is a bit different if you're in row A, B, C, or D up near the front and have a much, just kind of more on top of the action and not nearly as disengaged in that way.
Absolutely.
So, so get out, see Prime Productions. I'm super glad the work that they're doing. Prime started, in the car ride over. They did start in 2016. So this is a relatively new company, been around for 7 years. And I do love their focus that they've got. I pulled a quote from Playbill: strong women who are changing the world or themselves and others while living in interesting times. And I think that is an awesome mantra to have for the world that we're at right now in theater. We could use a lot more of that.
Yes.
So awesome. Well, Conrad, thanks for being on the
Dads in the House podcast here on Minnesota Playlist.
It was awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. I'm glad we got to get out and see a show together. I believe this is our first time seeing a show, even though we've known each other for quite a while.
I've seen your shows that you've produced, but I've never got a chance to say nope.
We've never gone and sat in the house together.
Exactly.
So absolutely great. So as always, you can catch a lot of stuff on minnesotaplaylist.com. If you're listening to this and it is not the end of April, we are excited to be releasing the new website at the end of April, so stay tuned for that. You can join to get on our mailing list, find out all the things that are happening in the Minnesota theater and performing arts scene on our calendar. You can always promote yourself with a talent profile. And of course, if you are a company or someone who needs to get connected, please don't hesitate to post a classified ad on our website and get out in front of the community in that way. I will be back with another show in May sometime. I don't know how these work. We're just making this up as we go along. It's 2023 and nobody knows what the hell they're up. Otherwise, thank you again for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode. Dads in the House is part of Playlist Presents, a podcast series covering the Minnesota performing arts scene. Have an idea for a Playlist Presents podcast? Want to record with us? Want to review a show with me? Email podcast@minnesotaplaylist.com. Our music was created in GarageBand, and most of the recording and editing was done at the Minnesota Playlist headquarters in South Minneapolis. Visit minnesotaplaylist.com to promote yourself with a talent profile, your show on our always free calendar, or your opportunity on our classifieds page. Thanks for listening. Go see live theater. Don't spend the night alone.